Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. Boy, are we glad you stopped by today. You're in for a treat. Our guest is Anna Veal, W0ANT, and she's the Young Ham of the Year. You're going to want to hear all about this young lady. And our co-host is Frank Howell, K4FMH, and he's going to be with us through the entire show. We're going to have a good time, and I hope it's a lot of fun for you to listen to. So keep it right here on QSO.
Broadcasting from near the banks of the Upper Cumberland River, this is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, USA.
Yes, sirree. Indeed, that's exactly what it is, WTWW, coming to you from the United States of America. I want to say thank you for tuning in and joining us tonight for QSO Live. And let's just check and see who all's here. Our co-host is Frank Howell, K4FM.
Frank Howell is here with Toe Tapping in the Studio, Ted. Great music in the intro.
You scared me. you came in here really loud. I was like, whoa. You know, it's like in them old Bill Cosby comedy albums, you know, where all of a sudden you'd hear the voice of God would go, right, you know. Okay.
Far from that level, Ted. Far from that level, but glad to be on tonight.
We have a special guest tonight. We have Anna Veal, W0ANT. Let's check and see if Anna is with us.
Hello.
Hello there. How
Hello,
are you?
Anna.
Good. How about you guys?
I'm doing fine. I don't know how Frank's doing tonight though. He scared me earlier.
Frank is right. I just rolled in from the Central Mississippi Amateur Radio Association meeting, where as I was literally walking out the door, I was elected vice president. Now, they don't expect much out of somebody who leaves the room when they're elected to office, right? So I'm doing great.
Also with us is David, KG4WXW. Hello, David.
And good evening to everyone.
And you're not there?
No.
So anyway, his microphone isn't working for some reason. And he can kind of check that out while we kind of get the show on the road. See, because while I'm here, he can actually crawl in back of the console, start poking around and trying to figure out what's going on here. Well, I'll tell you what. We're just all real proud of Anna. Anna is just an incredible young lady, and of course now she was. Awarded the Young Ham of the Year award this year at the Huntsville Ham Fest. And I think that any young person that achieves that level of success in ham radio, we need to get them on and talk and see what they're interested in and try to find out what makes them tick so we can turn all the rest of the young people in the United States into radio amateurs. What do you think about that, Anna?
Well, thank you very much to start off with. Very kind words. I'm very glad to be here tonight. Pretty excited. Downed a couple energy drinks before I got on, and I'm ready to go.
Did you have an energy drink, Frank?
No, I didn't, but, you know, it was a good thought. I could have had a V8.
Well, you know, I want to go right to the very beginning of all this, because Anna has a very, very interesting story. If you don't know who she is, and if you don't know anything at all about the Young Ham of the Year or anything like that, I would like Anna to kind of give us a brief. Well, it doesn't even have to be brief. It can just be. That's one beautiful thing about QSO. You can talk as long as you want to. Anyways, tell us a little bit about the very, very beginnings. There's some pictures of you up on the website, and you're not very big. So go back and tell us how you got into all this.
All right. Well, it's a pretty long story, but I guess I'll start when I was around 8 years old. So around 8 years old, started poking at the radio. My siblings and I started having little contests with the keyer so you could go the fastest and whatnot. And a couple weeks after that all started, I asked my dad if I could start studying for my license. And obviously, him being an amateur radio operator, he was all psyched and got me hooked up on QRZ so I could study. A few months into studying, me and my dad went to Dayton, where I passed my technician license on the first try. And after that started, I gave a few presentations here and there at different events. Some of them were in Dayton, some of them weren't. And the ball just kept rolling from there, I guess. I've gotten a couple words in the past, which I'm very thankful for. I started a couple of clubs at different schools that I've attended, such as my elementary school and my high school. And yeah, just got back from Huntsville, actually getting the award. So,
well, you know, you you started a clubs. I mean, you've actually started. How many clubs have you started?
In total, I've started two. Like I mentioned, I started one at my elementary school. We had about 10 kids there, and I currently have one going at my high school, STEM High School, with about 20 kids.
So now, let me ask you this. You started these. Are you still kind of in charge of the both of them, or how have they developed?
So the one in my elementary school, I'm currently not running anymore, mainly because I'm not in elementary school anymore. But the one at my high school, I am the president, the club president, as of right now.
Well, that's very cool. Frank, can you... ask some questions here? I know there's things going through your mind right now.
Listen, I am just in awe. And I'm a former college professor, and I've taught people for 35 years. And I look at your body of work, as we might say. I'm truly amazed. There are hams that go an entire lifetime and never found a single club. And you have done that. At 8 years of age, you got your technician license. You won a regional award. You won a national award. And, you know, I am truly in awe. I'm a late in life ham. I got interested in amateur radio about when you did, about 8 years old. That was back when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. You know, you got to remember that when I was 8 years old. But I truly am in awe of what you've accomplished thus far. And I look at your pictures, and you just have this passion. And am I seeing the real you when I describe this?
Well, thank you very much for the kind words. It's been a fun hobby. It's given me lots of things in the past, and it continues to give back right now, and I'm sure it will in my future as well. So I appreciate everything you're saying.
Well, you're headed to Colorado State University, I understand, and you want to become a biomedical engineer.
Indeed.
Good. I've got a good friend there at Colorado State. When you hit campus, go to the sociology department and look up Dr. Lynn Hempel and tell her you talked to this guy named Frank Howell. She can give you some pointers around campus. She's a wonderful person, former colleague. I do some writing with her. What I'm intrigued with the biomedical engineering, you've got a health issue that you deal with. Could you briefly kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I've wanted to become a biomedical engineer for a couple of years now, mainly because I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 12. And obviously, being a type 1 diabetic, I use a lot of medical equipment every day. One of the biggest things I use is my insulin pump. And those are created by biomedical engineers, and it's pretty much my lifeline. So just being around all that equipment and seeing how important it is and how much effects it takes into people's lives, it interests me a lot. And I want to be able to give back to the community as the community's given to me and kind of help invent more things and make things better when it comes to biomedical engineering.
I'd like to jump in and just ask a question. That is, Anna, with type 1 diabetes, which is really not anything to fool around with, in other words, you've got to be pretty serious, and you can live a pretty normal life if you are serious about it. But why don't you just share with folks a little bit how type 1 affects you on a daily basis, the things that you might have to do that other people wouldn't even give a thought to?
Sure. So I guess to start out with, I'll kind of differentiate type 1 from type 2. A lot of people probably know people with type 2 diabetes. It's not as severe as type 1. Many people with type 2 generally just take medication by mouth that helps them regulate their blood sugars. But if for a type 1, you're generally born with it, or you get it later in life from genetics. And as a type 1, every day I have to test my blood glucose around 12 times a day. And that's just with a finger prick, and I use a little machine that tests that. And then if I'm out of range, normal range for a person is between 80 and 120. I can be anywhere from 20 to 500. So as a type 1 diabetic, when I'm out of that range, I have two options. I can either take in an injection with a syringe filled with insulin, or as I mentioned before with my insulin pump, I have a kind of an IV-looking thing in my stomach that I can use to give myself insulin regularly.
This is Frank again. Are you active in any kind of sporting stuff?
At the moment, I'm focusing more on piano and guitar. I'm really into music. But when I was in middle school, I was on the track team. I was on the basketball team. I even did flag football for a little bit. So sports is a passion of mine. But like I said, I'm more focused into music right now.
On your biomedical work, you know, the space program over the past 30 years has made such an impact on medical technology. And today, with the miniaturization of electronics and the development of new types of sensors and how a lot of those things have become wireless, I guess on the one hand, you still have to transfer that physical liquid of insulin. Do you have some ideas of how to make an insulin already? Do you have? I know you're going to go study that, but do you already have some ideas of how to improve the insulin pump that you live with?
Well, just going through and seeing people at the American Diabetes Association, currently I'm doing a couple different things such as bike rides and walkathons to kind of help people that are older than me and already have that experience create better insulin pumps. But as for ideas of mine, I think when I'm older, I'd like to create some form of an insulin pump that can be inserted inside of the body rather than having to be controlled by the person, similar to like a pacemaker. Something that can control itself on its own, really. I think that would be pretty pretty spectacular. I think it would take a lot of stress off of kids my age that also have this disease.
Oh, it sounds like it would be. I have sleep apnea, severe sleep apnea, and I have a smaller than a bread box, to use an old phrase, device, sleep apnea device, that's a air pump. So, I need air pumped into my body as opposed to insulin. And the fact that this is a small box that packs up very easily, has a cell phone in it that sends the data back to my physician. So if the pressure needs to be changed, or quite frankly, between you, just you and me, nobody else is supposed to know this. If I were to not use it one night or two, it'll fib on me, which is good because I need to be on it every night, just as you would need to be on insulin. So I can identify with what you're saying. It would be wonderful for me if there was a apnea machine that was the size of a say a soda pop can or something like that. And I believe that that's coming. And thanks to people like you who have an early commitment to focusing on that, it'll happen.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's lots of different health issues around the world that require people to take on a lot of extra abilities, whether it be calculating numbers like I have to do when I'm eating or when I'm taking insulin, all the way to, like you were saying, with sleep apnea. There's just a lot of added stress with different medical issues that I think could be solved in the future.
Let me ask you this question, Anna. When you say calculating, so in the process of, say, going through a day, do you have to count calories or carbs or something in order to be able to know how much insulin you have to deal with?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can't just kind of look at my pump and give me how much insulin I think I need. I have to count my carbohydrates with every meal. As a diabetic, I don't really need to worry about calories because carbs are what makes up things like starch and sugars. But yeah, so I have to calculate carbohydrates within foods, and sometimes it's easier than others. Sometimes if I'm at home, I can just look at the backs of boxes, but it gets kind of complicated when you're sitting at dinner with someone and you have to ask the waitress for a nutrition chart or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes along with the carbohydrate counting. You also have to count your units of insulin that goes along with your carbohydrate intake.
So eating in a restaurant is not an easy task, I guess, about the best way to say it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But with that said, though, you're interested in going down a road that you can improve upon the medical technology for folks that do have diabetes. Now, the thing is that there's so many other diseases that connect itself to sugar diabetes. So you'd be in the process of saving folks from things like high blood pressure, heart disease, and a whole myriad of things that that's connected with sugar, a high sugar or hyperglycemia. So I can applaud that. And I guess, do you have any particular area that you're looking in that you're thinking that you have some real ideas about?
Well, I mean, obviously growing up with amateur radio, I have a technological side to me. I go to STEM school and academy as well, which is mainly technology-based. I work on computers most of the day. I'm taking an engineer class. I'm taking a lot of chemistry classes. So I guess going along with that, something along the lines of technology and building machinery would be kind of interesting for me.
For those of you that would like a shortwave radio that's bigger than maybe what you could hold in the palm of your hand, but yet is sensitive and selective, let me talk to you about the CC Radio Shortwave. The purpose of the CC Radio Shortwave was born when an engineer's time went into producing some of the best reception and audio that you could find in a portable radio. It's got all the necessary things, the tweakings available for excellent performance under various conditions, and offers the best combination of sensitivity, selectivity, and audio performance of any radio its size. Now, this radio delivers some of the best FM reception, and thanks to the built-in twin-coil ferrite antenna, the AM antenna I'm talking about, it makes the AM on this radio absolutely exceptional. It has continuous coverage of the shortwave bands and excellent reception right off the whip antenna. The 5-inch speaker is accurate, pleasant, and probably produces deeper bass than any portable of the same size. The CC Radio Shortwave is one of the few radios with a mono switch. When activated, the radio filters out the stereo FM multiplex signal, which can add a hissing noise when you're listening to a weak station. Now, let me tell you, this thing has an RF gain control, bandwidth control, fast and slow tuning. It's got bass and treble controls. It's got a lighted LCD display and lighted buttons, clock radio, snooze alarm. It only weighs 4.2 pounds, even though it's a pretty good-sized radio. Has a stereo headphone jack, stereo line output, so you can plug it into a recorder of some sort. It's got an IF out for input into a computer, 50 memory presets, a built-in charger with auto shutoff for nickel cadmium batteries. It uses 4D batteries or 4AA batteries, whichever you prefer, and all the programming backup, that is, for, you know, when you put in your memories and whatnot. Now, you can order this radio from the C Crane Company. It's real simple to do. All you have to do is call Bob Crane at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW when you order this radio. Now, that, once again, the phone number is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863.
Is it possible that a coffee roaster who has been blind from birth could make the best tasting coffee in the world? Well, I'm here to tell you that not only is it possible, but it's true. If you would like the most delightful, rich cup of coffee you have ever drank in your life, I'd like to invite you to visit the website of The Unseen Bean. That's The Unseen Bean, UNSEENBEAN, TheUnseenBean.com. Jerry Leary, amateur radio operator. operator, shortwave listener. He is the owner of the Unseen Bean, one of the country's few blind coffee roasters. You will love his coffee. We want to invite you once again, go to his website, and that's theunseenbean.com. That's theunseenbean.com. Here at the QSL Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. You're listening to the QSO Radio Show, and it's all about ham radio. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get back to our guest, Anna Veal, W0ANT, the Young Ham of the Year, along with our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. You know, Frank, something is interesting, and I just read an article about this here not too long ago, and it said that people who have type 1 diabetes, who watch things and are very careful, actually live longer and have healthier lives than their counterparts who pay very little attention to diet, exercise, and all those sort of things.
Wow. Somehow after hearing that, I'm not surprised. I would not have been able to predict that, but you know, there's no substitute for watching what you eat, watching what you do. And we have so many things in our culture that lead us so far from that, and I sort of fall into that sometimes. I'm at the point where I need to lose about 10 pounds. I'm not obese, or my BMI is not, wouldn't calculate me into that being obese, but I'm kind of in that zone where I will eat well, I'll exercise well, and my weight will be where it needs to be, and then I'll travel, and that behavioral disruption kicks in, and then 2 months later, I've gained 10 pounds. So you don't have that luxury. You really have to kind of focus on it almost every day. And in some ways, as Ted was kind of alluding to from the article he read, that continual need to focus is helpful to anyone, whether they have diabetes or not. But because you have that, it does kind of require that that continued focus. Let me ask you this. What do you like most about amateur radio? Most of us who are amateurs, there's something about it where we get that thrill. Some of us call it the magic. What is that for you?
Well, that's a very easy question for me to answer. Ever since I was first licensed, I've been extremely interested in contests. My dad will tell you, I kind of get bored when it comes to DXing. There can be a really rare country on the bands, and he'll scream at me from downstairs telling me to get down there and try and contact them. And I'm not interested in that kind of stuff. I really enjoy the contesting aspect, the speed of it, the, like you said, the thrill it can give you. I've won a couple contests in, my, amateur radio experience, and, just the thrill of winning and, being able to participate in things where there's not generally a lot of children or even girls really is interesting for me. So I'd have to say contesting is probably my favorite part of the hobby.
Got a little of that athletic competition coming into it, huh?
Yeah, there's also, I mean, contesting's not all for me. I mean, I really enjoy things like fox hunting and high altitude balloon launches, stuff like that as well. I just like the faster paced parts of the hobby, I guess you could say.
Have you ever worked with any emergency groups and on like 2 meters or 70 centimeters and doing some of the races and things like that?
You know, I've never really truly looked into it. I remember when I was little attending a few meetings here and there. I think I was just a little too small to completely grasp what was going on at the time. But I might get back into it now that I'm older.
One of the things about that is being a net control operator. It's not like contesting, but you have that kind of pile-up scenario, but you're in charge of the pile-up, and you've got to regulate it. You're like the traffic cop. So you might, when you get a chance to do that, given your passion to help others, that might be something you think about.
Yeah, totally. I might look into that.
I was talking to the one gentleman that was in charge of East Coast National Traffic System, and I think, and from what I can understand, and if anyone else knows better, then you can correct me, but there seems to be a waning of the national traffic system, which is really not understandable to me, and that just seems to be. What do you think about that, Anna? How could we increase the interest in the national traffic system from coast to coast here in the United States?
You know, I'll have to think about that one and get back to you here in a little bit. I have to.
The answer is not required. It was just kind of like, what do you think? What's the idea? You know, I was just thinking from a younger person's perspective, what would pull you into that? What would get you interested in traffic handling and being part of that national traffic system?
Yeah, well, you know, being in the 21st generation, technology and stuff like that, stuff along those lines, speed and critical thinking would probably get a lot of kids interested. I'm sure you guys are aware of the large increase in video games in my generation. And I think that's one of the reasons that kids like video games so much is because they have to think so hard and because they have to think so quickly. And so I think if we made it a little bit of a quicker process, I think kids would be really interested in it.
Frank,
that's a great point. Well, you know, it kind of picking up on what how Anna responded, the traffic system with the fairly rigid forms go kind of fly in the face of what Anna was talking about with the, you know, quick reflexive video games and things like that in an age of cell phone technology and instant messaging. Less formal, quicker paced, and that sort of thing. So there are some who think the traffic system should evolve a bit. And there's reasons, on the other hand, why we have that formality. But I hear what she's saying, Ted, and I can kind of understand why your comment is valid in terms of the waning of that.
I was just thinking, because there's so many parts of this hobby, I think we could benefit from listening to someone like Anna who says, hey, guys, you know, why don't we do it this way? Why don't we change this and this a little bit, tweak this, you know? And, you know, and I listened to her talk about the things that are really interesting to her, I should say, and contesting. You know, boy, now that's a fast-paced thing. And is that part of what you think it is, Anna, that it's so fast-paced and it's so, you know, it's so rapid and it, you know, consumes you? I mean, you can't jump in the middle of a contest without total concentration and all of that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I do think that's important. I think people need to kind of start listening to my generation a little more and kind of adapting to their ways of life, their lifestyle, because the kids that are growing up now, they know nothing but technology. So I think we need to kind of ramp up our work system, as well as making sure that kids aren't punished for making mistakes when they're learning, because everything, including amateur radio, you have to make mistakes to be able to grow and to learn in this hobby. You don't want to be punished for messing up someone's call sign or feeling like you're being put down for not getting someone on a contest or DXing. I think we just kind of need to learn to adapt to the generation and their technological advances, as well as making sure not to punish kids for mistakes while they're learning and growing.
David, you're sitting here silent. I think David's mic is working now.
Yes, it is.
Do you have any comments along that line? You're way younger than I and Frank both. So you know you need to jump in here and make a few comments and converse a little bit with Anna.
Oh, man, both my father and Frank, I'm sure, have had the old man on the other side of the microphone, you know, putting you down for jumping on a repeater, doing something wrong. I know that Dad's got a couple of stories about that kind of stuff. And you're right. You know, when the younger generation gets in, they do. They feel almost an immense pressure to make sure that they do everything right, because if not, there's going to be somebody on the other end of that microphone or speaker, or whatever, that's going to be, you know, going to give them some bad advice, or might not be able to, you know, they need to go more into the encouragement side of things. They need to encourage the person to, you know, continue what they're doing. They're doing a good job, and, you know, here's what you can do a little bit better. You know, so I don't know. I do. I hear that, and I see that a lot.
David, I would agree with you, and one of the things, just as a personal observation, is that the old guard demographically, now demographically I'm one of those. Remember Pogo, he said, we found the enemy, he's us. But yet I'm a late in life ham, so I may not have all the barnacles on my ship that those others who are also age 62 and have been a ham for, you know, 40 years or more. I wish hams would lighten up and just give the new hams a break. And let's just don't wear that on our sleeve about back when I started, we had to do CW in the snow, you know, that kind of thing. And I wanted to say, hear, hear, when Anna made her comment. I would echo that with yours. I think if we just lighten up, And us old timers, age wise, should be open to learning from younger people. Fresh eyes always see things differently. Sometimes they see things differently in an incorrect way from a technical point of view, but that's okay. But sometimes they see things from a wisdom point of view in ways that we need to listen to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And actually, my mom's sitting down over here. She's kind of itching in her seat, wanting to say something. So is it all right if my mom jumps in here for a second?
Absolutely.
You bet.
All right, here we go.
Hi,
I'm
Peggy Veal. I'm KD0.
Okay, say your call sign again, because I think Skype chopped you off there.
KD0ISN.
There you go.
Well, yeah, and... one of the things that I've really been sitting here and just itching to say, I teach French at STEM High, where Anna is a student as well. And I'm originally a native of France. I came here to the U.S. In the 1990s and became a citizen in 2004. And I learned English over the ham radio. And for me, one of the greatest things about ham radio was the fact that it was practical learning. And I try to do that in my classroom now, because this generation of kids, when they don't know how to do something, they just go on YouTube and look it up, and they watch a video and then they pause and rewind and they try to figure out what it is that, you know, they're trying to learn. And with ham radio, it was just like that for me learning English. It wasn't a list of vocabulary. It wasn't quizzes and tests. I was just thrown in, and everybody, you know, gave me a chance to learn different words and make longer sentences, and look where it brought me. I mean, I'm here now. I live in the U.S., and if somebody had told me years ago that I would be teaching my native language to people here, I think I would have probably said they were crazy. So that was one of the biggest things. And I think Anna jumped in the ham radio for that same reason. It wasn't, I mean, I guess she was learning, but she didn't realize she was learning. It was an environment that was just very practical and very, but very technical also. But she took it in, because it wasn't a typical classroom. It wasn't something theoretical. It was just, she was just thrown into it, and she learned at her own pace.
And Peggy, the psychologist, I'm a sociologist, and was a professor there. Psychologists call that play. And play is learning while having fun, and the fun comes from it being unstructured.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
My kids learn more about French culture by sending emails back and forth with a pen pal in France than I could ever teach them in the classroom. And having that experience of ham radio for me, it was a gigantic classroom. I traveled all around the world from my kitchen. I learned geography. I learned language. I learned culture. I learned family units around the world. And I think that that is what we need to focus on to appeal to that younger generation, is that opportunity to play and learn as you're playing.
Do you think that we have too much structure in amateur radio in terms of teaching and getting folks licensed? Do we have too much structure in operation today?
I don't. I think that it depends on how it's presented. My husband, when he teaches at STEM, doesn't give packets and doesn't talk about tests in a way that is threatening. I think that he shows the play aspect of radio, and that's what Anna brings to it as well. You know, the fact that she's 15 and she's licensed and she's doing all kinds of things with ham radio, but she doesn't have conversations with her peers about the testing part or the really technical aspects. It starts off as, you know, oh, I talk to people in this country or that country, and being able to bounce off ideas. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities with the ARRL to receive grants and to train in all kinds of ways that we could easily appeal to girls as well. And in the club at Anna's school, I would say we have, it's half and half. We have half girls and half boys, because it's presented in a play way, whether it's fox hunting or all kinds of, you know, making an antenna with measuring tape. I think it's just the way you present it. It has to begin with play. You can't come in and present it as a test and, you know, start with the really technical stuff.
You know, you have some great comments. One of the projects that I'm involved with is an outreach effort to promote amateur radio and build an amateur radio station at the oldest orphanage in the state of Mississippi. It's at a place called French Camp Academy. There are 50 students there who have signed up for training and testing. And we've had a number of the major vendors donate things like Bob Heil with microphones, things like that. And your comments, so we'll take, it's very split fairly evenly, maybe 60-40 guys versus girls. But we've gone up and done some go-to stations and to just let them get on the air and let them talk to people. And then we'd sneak in why certain things happen. And the thing that in the planning for this, and here's my punchline, we have some of what I'd call the old guard who said, well, Frank, you know, you're really getting too many donations. You know, we've got a 50-foot tower and we've got three beams, and, you know, they're going to have stuff that I don't even have as a grown adult. They've got to crawl before they walk. And my comment is, these kids have had some of the worst curveballs that life has had to offer. You've got some thrown away kids. You've got some abused kids. You've got some substance abuse kids. And you got kids that just lost their parents. And my argument is, if we can capture that play, let's give these folks some strawberry shortcake in life for a change. They're going to learn the hard knocks of working hard, and let's keep them simple. Let's give them as much as we can to keep it be fun. And so you've captured, I'm going to remember some of your comments, Peggy. We got to keep it playful, because after all, this is a hobby, not a job.
Right. And with that, in our school system, we're trying to talk more and more about what we call the growth mindset, which is teaching the kids that they have to fail in order to progress. And I think that the world of ham radio is just that. You don't have grades associated with it. You don't have the pressure of having to know everything right off the bat. You know, people are really welcoming to the new kids in the world of ham radio. And at least that's how I felt when I was a teenager. You know, and it was a great opportunity for me to learn, but there wasn't the pressure. And I think kids nowadays need a lot of that. They're so used to having their schedule so full of different things, whether it's clubs or athletics or school, that are so pressured with grades and the feeling that they have to succeed. And I think ham radio is just one of those things that has stayed the same in that way, that they can fail and they can try again. And, you know, they still get rewarded no matter what.
Now, you know, and Ted, I don't want to dominate this, but here's an interesting twist on what Peggy's saying. Her own daughter likes the competition, and I suspect she does because she defines what is successful in those contests, not someone else.
Well, you know,
I agree with that as well. When I was at Chuck, also known as K0RF station, back when I was 9 or 10, we would set goals for ourselves. We wouldn't, I mean, obviously, if we didn't complete those goals, there's no backstab of it. But if we did complete those goals, it was kind of like a high five for each other, saying, you know, yay, we got 100 contacts in this contest, and we worked 20 different states. Just stuff like that, setting your own goals, I think, is what makes contesting so fun for me.
Well, you know, I want to say, I think, I may disagree with two or three of you. I think we're overstructured in terms of the way ham radio is ran on the air. And I think we're overstructured in terms of the way we teach. I agree with Peggy there. I think that the fun part of it is, like, if you don't have that, I don't think you're going to attract folks in, or kids in, especially younger people, because life's too serious as it is anyways. Every day, you know, you get up out of bed as a young person today, it's far more serious than it was when I was a kid. You know, I mean, it just, and I think that... what that also leads to, now, you know, Anna, you disagree with me, okay? I want you to I want you to disagree with me. I think it lends itself to a, you know, like dual personality hams. In other words, when we're around our peers, you know, we behave ourselves and we're very, very strict and straightforward and we operate in a certain manner, you know. But then when we get off by ourselves, we tend to play because the freedom is there, and that's where the fun is. And I see that, and I think it should be, that should be done away with. We should be able to be amongst our peers and have the most fun, you know, and not be worried about structure and not afraid to make a mistake, or maybe even pave a new path, a new method of doing something, a new way of starting a QSO, a new way of you know, conducting a contest or whatnot. So, I don't know. I want someone to disagree with me here.
You know, I kind of disagree in some ways. I think the structure of the hobby is what kind of makes it a joy for a lot of people. For example, I know just behaving on the airways has led me to meet a lot of new friends, and kind of having those rules and those structures prevents a lot of people from abusing their privileges. Having that structure was one of the main reasons that I got to travel to Costa Rica for a de-expedition. But I do agree with you that in some ways the hobby is a little bit too structured. I personally feel like the test to get licensed kind of does turn off a lot of kids in this generation, mainly because of how hard it can be to manage time, to find time to study. But at the same time, I feel like that structure is needed to keep a hobby running. I don't think without the structure that we have, this hobby would be continuing as much as it is in this generation.
Like,
Anna, one comment that you made, I want to just briefly add to that. You know, this may sound funny for a college professor to say, but I use the analogy of a driver's license. And I always ask technicians who are studying for the tech exam, and they say, hey, how should I approach this? I mean, gosh, it seems like so much to learn. And I'll usually ask, particularly if you're of age to drive, did you become a good driver by studying for your driver's license? And usually the answer is, well, no, I just something I had to do. And I say, well, just memorize the answers on the technician exam if that's the way you have to get licensed, because you will learn to be a good ham by doing ham radio and getting an Elmer. And a lot of people disagree with that. But, you know, the exam is not like the European PhD, where you just go hang around and read a lot and talk to people who are further down the road. And then when you think you're ready, you take these exit exams. And if you pass, you get your PhD. And if you don't, you don't. You don't study up until you're a master ham and then take your technician license. Who on earth would do that without any reward of operating, except that, you know, with a control operator? So I just encourage people to get that technician license, even if you have to memorize their answer, but then learn why those answers are the way they are by playing ham radio. Because as your mother talked about, you learn that stuff by doing it, and you don't realize that you're learning it. Anyway, Ted, I cut you off a bit.
Well, it's hard to do on Skype. Sometimes, you know, you start to talk and someone else is starting to talk at the same time. I guess what I was referring to, not necessarily a structureless ham radio, you know. No, you have to have structure. You have to have a method of doing things. But what I'm saying is that sometimes I think that young people, like David says, they get on the air and they choose their words very, very carefully. I'm not talking about somebody misbehaving. I'm talking about sitting on the edge of their seat. And that, I think that if you're choosing your words so carefully, it takes the joy out of spontaneous communication. It almost removes your personality, you know. But a good example of that, let me just, you know, I like to, at the end of a QSO, because I'm a troublemaker, I like to say 73s, and I say it very boldly, 73s, and invariably I'll get an email from somebody that says, that's the improper use, you should say 73, and you know, and I love it when they do that, because then what I do is I send them a copy of a QSL card signed by Hiram Percy Maxim that says,
you bet,
73s, okay? Now, where that comes from, I don't know. And, you know, if I'm in QSO with somebody, I don't care what they say at the end of the QSO. I'm just happy to talk to them. You know, I mean, it's a, but I think a lot of times young people are I guess I want to say, they're more taken advantage of because they're not an old curmudgeon like me that'll, you know, that'll bite back. They just kind of sit back and try to be polite, you know, because they don't want to be, like me, a troublemaker, okay? So anyway, go ahead, Anna.
Well, I was just going to jump in there. I've had the negativity in the hobby as well. Even when I was 8 years old, my little squeaker voice, you know, on the airwaves, I would still get a lot of people and a lot of nasty emails just correcting me. And I totally agree with you when you say that, you know, when you're talking to someone, you're just kind of happy to talk to them. You don't, you're not structuring your sentences or trying to say perfect things. I just think that, like you said, it's important to keep the hobby a little bit unstructured, as well as keeping that boundary there.
I think that spontaneity is what makes it fun. I don't know. How do you see this, Frank? Am I off track here?
No, I don't, because I've had the same thing. And, you know, we could get into the academic part of structured meaning and meaning structures. That is, when you have an abbreviation such as the 7-3, it takes on, that symbol takes on an independent meaning from what constructed it. Now, I'm getting into academic stuff. so in, you know, Hiram Percy Maxim by that time had already put the meaning of 7-3 into the symbol. And then if he was saying that to more than one person, then we would logically make it plural. And I've had that argument. And basically, I agree, new people, they don't have to be young people, but new people to amateur radio don't, you know, sort of feel their Wheaties, if you will, enough as a rule, and can get intimidated. And that was part of what I was saying earlier about lightening up. And just because you've been in something a long time, whether it's golf or amateur radio, it doesn't mean that everyone has to view the world the way you do. And that's, you know, it's just a shame. And we've both heard people kind of ride herd on their seniority. And that's bad regardless of what the hobby is.
Yeah, like you said, with the golf reference there, it's kind of like telling a professional golf player he's holding his club wrong. I don't really think it's as long as you're doing it and you're having fun and you're meeting new people, there's not really a general structure for talking to people. I mean, when you're in the real world, you don't, I mean, of course you have a little bit of structure, but you're not expected to say something exact when you're talking to someone on the airways.
I think that spirit was captured pretty good by Hiram Percy Maxim with his invention of the Wolf Hong and the Ready Snitch and all these horrible-looking devices. He had to have a sense of humor that went way and above and beyond. And incidentally, Frank, when he was signing this QSL card, it was just to one person, and he signed it 73s. So I think,
you know, a guy who invents a machine gun's got to have a sense of humor somewhere, right, Ted?
I would think so. But you know, I guess what I want to do with part of what we're doing with this radio show is I want to hear some of Anna's ideas about ham radio and things that where she sits and thinks and says, well, you know what? It'd be really cool if we could do this, or it'd be really cool if we could do that, because this is a platform that literally thousands of amateur radio operators are listening, and I think they would have a deep respect for your opinion in regards to your view of the hobby, your suggestions of the hobby, and so on and so forth. So don't at all be shy. Speak up and say what you think. Tell us older folks to... to pay attention.
Well, like you were stating earlier with Percy Maxim, I think he did have a very good sense of humor, and I've met a lot of people. I've had a lot of Elmers in the past, such as Don Wilbanks and Brian N5ZGT. People like them, also Dwayne, Whiskey Yankee 7, Fox Delta. A lot of different people who capture the humor of the hobby. I remember when I was in Huntsville, we did a Wolf Hong ceremony, and Don Wilbanks was QRM, and he got all excited. He had, God, one of them even had a taser, I think. And, you know, they were making the hobby fun, and all the kids that were there, were laughing their butts off, you know, having a great time. And I think we need to make more events like that. I think kind of similar to what we have in Dayton, Ohio every year with the conferences, I think it'd be great if we had a sort of youth conference. I know we have like the youth forums, which I actually participated in a couple years back. I gave a presentation there, and it was a great experience. I met lots of kids, but I think creating a lot more things like the Dayton Hamvention more towards kids and teenagers my age, where not only can they meet new people, but like we're doing tonight, can kind of express their opinions, you know? Maybe something structured like a science fair where you can kind of give off your exhibit and show what you think the hobby needs. I think that would be a spectacular thing to do, kind of just to get more ideas involved, because the more input you have on a hobby, the more it's going to improve and the more it's going to expand.
Anna, you really gave me an idea here. For the last 5 years, I've been what I've described to Ted as a flunky volunteer for ARRL. I've been assistant director of the Delta Division. And I recently stepped back from that role when I became co-host of this show. It's, you know, there's only so much time on the clock. But you really said something there that I think it might be worthy of merit. Now, you've been recognized as the Young Ham of the Year. So, you know, you've been given an award, which says you're someone who has done enough to be singled out for recognition. The ARL has a structure of governance where there are sections. They're not just states, but for most sections, a section is a state. Some big states like California and Texas and some others are split to kind of equalize the number of hams. Do you think that the ARL should have a young ham such as yourself to be on the ARL council so that there would be a position where at least one young person could sit, listen, have a vote, have input into the league's activities?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think having someone who could kind of represent the youth of the hobby, have an email or a blog where people can input their ideas and kind of be that representative for the ARL would be a great idea. Just, I know we have a few young people, well, somewhat young, representing in the ARL, but I think having a younger representative, you know, in their teens could be a great idea to kind of expand the future of the hobby. Because I know, at least during personal experience, once a ham fest, doesn't matter what ham fest it is, I'll always go to a dinner or a banquet and they'll always be talking about this, you know, always trying to get the youth involved. And I feel like we always say it, but we don't really give the youth a chance to kind of speak their mind. So I think, yes, that would be a great idea.
Ted, what do you think?
Oh, I think that would be an excellent idea. I think that only in terms of the fact that that young person is going to have some support. In other words, there's going to have to be some other folks that's going to stand by them. Otherwise, we run into, and I'm not saying that anybody and everybody with the league is a curmudgeon, but I'm just saying the curmudgeon factor is awful high inside that organization. You know, and I'm part of it. I'm a member of it, you know. But I think there would have to be some folks standing there that, you know, can give some hand signals at meetings and say, hey, wait, you know, cool it, you know, and support this young person. And I think that would be an excellent idea, because I think that the way the, you know, people over 50, their brains work different than people who are 30 and under. And I think there would have to be somebody doing hand signals or part translation there. But with that support, can you imagine where the where it could go in terms of ideas and execution of ideas and things that would appeal, literally, genuinely appeal to young people? And I think one of the problems we've got is, you know, you got people over 50 trying to figure out how to get more young people into the hobby. You know, we've got run public service announcements on the radio with guys saying, you know, like, you should consider ham radio as a hobby. You know, we got to get rid of that. You know, we got to have a young person doing that public service announcement and coming up with the ideas. But I think the support is really key in this.
Well, you know, one way of perhaps doing that, and I'd greatly value your response to this. You know, we're organized into these divisions, and those are our kind of regions. And I wonder if a young ham council, for lack of a better word, where each section has one young ham who would sit on that council, and at the annual division conference, there's some travel support, you know, the kind of things you're talking about, where they go and they meet and they talk about amateur radio issues and what appeals to young people. And have that structure so it would filter up to kind of a national representative, such as Anna might be here if this were active today. So where you've got a group of young people who are in effect supporting that national person by filtering their ideas up and through, and that would be You know, ideas like this, when you have young people like Anna who is so accomplished and who's so motivated, the next person may come along and may be meritorious but may not have quite the passion. So you can't make it a personal thing, but you've got to structure the organization so that you'll have enough young people doing that. Now, was that just a mouthful that didn't have much there, Anna? But what are your thoughts on that? I'm just thinking out loud here.
Well, I have a couple things to say on that. I think your idea of the council is a good idea because obviously a teenager from New York or California is going to have a little bit of a different outlook than, say, a teenager from Arkansas or Texas. And I think that we need to kind of get all those different diversities of people to come onto a common agreement. And I also think that's why Elmering is so important in this generation because, I mean, it doesn't matter how much a youth studies on amateur radio, the best way for them to gather information and experiences by talking to people that have been in this hobby for a while, seeing what it was like when they first got into the hobby, seeing what structures they had, taking all those different ideas and kind of building off of them. I don't really think that this hobby needs to be scratched and rebuilt. I think it just needs to have some more accommodations like you were stating. And I think a council would be a great idea, sort of like I said before, a Senate, where you could kind of get a large amount of ideas.
You can tell that as a college student back in the early 70s, I was involved in student government, can't you?
Well, you know, that would give local representation, you know, where, you know, one person being on a board with the ARRL is really not quite enough. I think your idea is rather incredible because, see, there would... You know, if you had somebody from the Delta Division, they could interact with all the young people in this area and not necessarily get overloaded. And then they could all get together and exchange ideas. I think that would just be incredible. I think that would really be cool.
Well, you know, you've talked about the curmudgeon factor. And even though I'm periodically active on 75 meters and contribute to that, imagine a youth net on 75 meters where, you know, whatever frequency makes sense, where it's primarily a group of young hams who are having a round table and discussing things as opposed to that one sort of marginalized young ham trying to get in edgewise among those who have been on that one frequency for some 50 years. So that would be a delight to my ears.
I mean, I see what you're saying there, and I've actually participated in a couple of kind of youth frequencies where there are a couple of organizations already going where once a week everyone will hop on the air and a bunch of kids will just sit down and talk and tell them kind of what they've been doing this week, their new ideas on the hobby. And my mom's still sitting here. She brings up a good point of, like we were saying about communication, what about something like a kid ham radio magazine where kind of like the QRZ magazines or QRT, we have a kid magazine where rather than publishing a bunch of adult findings, we have a lot of kid recognition, because I do think that recognition is a good part of the hobby. Obviously recognition is going to get anyone excited. And I think if young kids see that recognition in a thing like a magazine or an app or a website, they're going to get more interested in the hobby as well.
Anna, are you familiar with the 4-H program?
No, I can't say I am.
Okay, it's been primarily something through the what's called the land-grant university system, Colorado State, as opposed to University of Colorado. And it's a youth program, and it's basically about youth development. Well, bottom line is, it's a little bit like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, where you've got these badges, you know, you do these things, and if you master them, you get an award. Well, in 4-H, they have a national conference, and they have what are typically called Silver Tray Awards. And if you move up that chain in terms of, you know, accomplishment, and you go to this national convention, you may be sitting next to a Heisman Trophy winner from football, Miss America, some other celebrity. And they have a lot of people who go there and meet with these young people and spend a little time with them and hear their dreams and give them advice. And they get a lot of recognition. Plus, they get some money and scholarships to go to college on. Now, I'm laying all that out there because there is an organizational model that has a local to national structure. And this is a little bit of an inside joke, and you'll have to forgive me for it. Gee, Ted, can you think of a magazine that might be interested in including a youth section?
Well, do I answer that hypothetically or honestly?
I answer it however you wish.
It would be nice if we had a magazine that was driven in that direction and had that sort of intention. That would be really incredible.
Hello, hey, well, that, Frank.
You know, Anna, you have a great idea here. I think as we're brainstorming, and what I'd like to do, if you or your mom could jot down my call sign K4FMH, Kilo for Fox Mike Hotel. I'm good on QRZ. If you would like to drop me an email, I'd like to explore putting some flesh on these bones of this idea. And I think I want to kind of play it as mainly your ideas. And I'm just, you know, an old college professor trying to help a young person flesh that out. Because I think given that you're young ham of the year, this idea would be well received coming from you. So let's do something about it and put a little flesh on it. So if you'd follow up with me at your convenience, I think Ted and I could give you some advice as follow-up, and you'll probably, after this broadcast, hear from a lot of other people. So I think you have some options to really make an impact on how youth are both perceived and interacted with in amateur radio.
Hey, Frank.
Awesome. I'll definitely shot you an email, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, Frank, it's top of the hour. It's time for a station ID, and then we're going to do a commercial here as well. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Broadcasting from near the banks of the Upper Cumberland River, this is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, USA.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I thought that was a station ID. I thought we were going to do a commercial as well. I apologize. But you know, I was looking on Facebook, and there's actually there's a couple of amateur radio youth clubs that are on there. There's one here that I'm looking at that is primarily just on EchoLink, but I haven't found anybody that's doing anything on HF. It's all been EchoLink stuff.
Well, one of the reasons I suggested HF was Ted's phrase, the curmudgeon factor. And I mean, let's face it, 75 meter phone is, you know, the home of a lot of curmudgeonly ham. So given that I'm on there some, I'm poking fun at myself too. But yeah, and you know, that would be great. Whatever works is, you know, I think a good one. So thanks for doing that research.
You know, I think those 75 meters, you know, it may be the curmudgeon. One of my favorite bands, though, because at night, you know, you're within the distance of meeting people on 75 meters. I mean,
yes.
You know, and I think that's what makes that band so cool. It'd be perfect. It would be perfect for a youth net of some sort.
Well, I think so, and it's... you know, part of it is if you want to make inroads into an organization that, whether they're barriers or not, gets into motives, but putting YouthNet on 75 just has a panache to it, to me, to allow that kind of input to be heard by others. And there are a lot of folks reading the mail. And so in a way, I think some of the old curmudgeon types would learn some things by just listening.
Well, you see, that opens the door. Now, Anna, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. If you have a youth net, let's say, on 75 meters, and you're within driving range of most of the people that you're talking to on a regular basis, those same people are then going to show up at local ham fests or regional ham fests in the area, which then opens the door for groups of young people to meet in person and get together and just have fun and have a good time.
Yeah, and that's one of the main reasons that we started this youth club at my my high school. We meet about a couple times a month, and we've done a lot of different things within the hobby. I know my dad's run a couple of fox hunts with the kids. He's taught them how to make, like my mom was mentioning earlier, just cheap antennas that work really well. We've done a couple balloon launches, stuff like that. And I think getting together with that youth and meeting other kids your age that are interested in the hobby is important as well.
What's the kind of the top drawer regional ham fest near Littleton?
I'm waiting as well because I don't know.
What you know, obviously Dayton's the creme de la creme in terms of the ham fest, but Anna, what you know, I'm just ignorant because I don't live in that region, but what would be the regional ham fest that, you know, would be driving distance from your neck of the woods?
I mean, I know we go to a couple ham fests up in Greeley every year. We go to some in Brighton. There's a lot around. There's still a couple of hours away from where I live. There's not generally a lot of huge ham fests in Denver. Sure, there's a few, but most of the time we usually have to drive a couple hours to get to a fairly large ham fest.
Does your club, I mean, what's the stance of the club as far as attending ham fest? Is there ever like, hey, we need to get like rent a van or something and get our parents to help us out and we go kind of in mass to them? How does that play out in your club, or is that just not something your club has recognized or focused on?
You know, I think the club that I'm running now is so focused on teaching young kids and teaching them new things that I just don't think we've really put any thought into actually attending ham fests, because like I said, it would take a lot of time and money to transport 20 kids to a ham fest 2 hours away. So well, my club generally tries to stay in the area and do things that we can do within a time constraint, I guess I would say.
Sure. And let me ask you this. Is your mom still on the edge of her seat? Because I'm sort of almost just volunteering her to lead a little bit of this effort.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. Yes, definitely on the edge of my seat, because I was hearing you talking about youth pages on Facebook. I was just at a Google conference last weekend, and I hate to tell you this, but kids aren't using Facebook anymore. That's more what we use. And I would love to see, you know, whenever there's youth or even, you know, people our generation attending any type of ham radio event, use the social networks that the youth actually use, such as Snapchat or Twitter and other different social networks. And anything from, you know, trending a hashtag like ham radio can do that. Because sometimes I get caught up in conversations at school about emergency preparedness. You know, we live in Colorado, so it's a very real thing here. And I always think in the back of my mind, oh, ham radio could do that. And then we talk about making our classrooms accessible to the world. So our kids should be able to learn by communicating with other kids around the world. And I think, oh, well, ham radio could do that. And so I've always thought that it would be kind of neat to have a hashtag that would get started in the ham radio world, just to get that little expression out there for the youth to keep hearing that, well, ham radio could do that, and then just get interested, get curious. And if people who were taking their tests at ham fests or doing some cool fox hunting could just Snapchat those things, those are the surfaces, those are the social networks that the kids are using. And it would be interesting to see what impact that would have.
Well, I'm in total agreement with you with that. Our club that I'm informally I'm called the branding officer, and our hashtag is hashtag We Do Stuff as a club. And so getting that kind of thing out there on social media has brought us a lot more younger hams. I mean, it doesn't have to be teenagers, but your point's really well taken. And that's something that, you know, the league has kind of sort of gotten into that, but they could really keep their ears to the ground. And I think with this little organization that we were kind of creating here as we were blue skying during this interview, I think it's got some potential for real legs and have the opportunity to really make an impact. Peggy, the reason I was pushing you just a little bit upon getting high school clubs to these things is their presence would do as much to impact the older folks at the clubs by seeing a lot of young people there that don't usually come as much as it would benefit the young people. Kind of a two-way street there. So just throwing that out there, but I think you've got some great points about the social media that's relevant to the demographic we want to reach.
Sure thing. Yeah. No, I think that's a great point, just to be able to bring the kids over and just have them start conversations with, you know, the other generations there at those ham fests could be really powerful for sure. Oh, now my husband's on the edge of his seat too.
I get the whole family involved here.
Hey Ted, it's Paul, N0 Alpha Hotel. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Go ahead and chime in. I obviously is something's brewing in your head here. Just let it out to all of us.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I've been downstairs in the shack listening to you guys on shortwave, so it's been interesting. The K9AY Loop's doing a great job. A couple of things I thought were interesting, that Anna's got different perspective and Peggy's got a different perspective. And I think my perspective, two things with the radio club at school, we have kids anywhere from third grade to high school seniors, kids that are just now learning algebra, all the way to kids who are, you know, 5 years of experience in putting together payloads for the rocketry program, those types of things at the school. And it's not always easy to have a club meeting and try to offer the type of differentiation for all the kids involved. So we tend to go off the Elmer system with the older kids, and we like to keep them entertained. And a lot of times they end up entertaining us. So that's one thing I thought was pretty interesting. And then the other thing is, I think you guys were asking about Hamfest and so forth. We live in a big metropolitan area, and Anna's right in a way. I think the nearest Hamfest to our house is in Golden, which is probably, you know, 45-minute, sometimes an hour drive. Colorado Springs, you know, we've got – that's another hour. Or we've got them up in either Brighton or Fort Collins, which can be an hour and a half to 2 hours away, depending on traffic. So it's interesting because I just love listening to the Peggy and Anna and hearing what they have to say. It's a refreshing experience as a dad to hear all the years and so forth they've had to share with the hobby and what they come up with.
Well, I think having different perspectives is the key to the whole thing. In other words, there's no one person that's got the handle on it. And I think it's really cool because, you know, Frank and I get on here and, boy, we just argue back and forth about everything, you know. And but I think different perspectives is what makes ham radio as interesting as it is. And so I welcome that. I want to hear, you know, I want to hear perspectives that are just as radical as they can be, and some that are just overly conservative. I think there's a, if you can get a synergy going between all of that, that's when you have it made.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ted, I was sort of saying that there would be as much of a benefit for, say, hypothetically, your ham club of high school students going to a ham fest for the others at the ham fest. They would benefit from the young people being there as much as it would be vice versa. One thing that we're toying around with the French Camp Academy is that they have a wonderful summer camp program. And, you know, it's a Christian-oriented school, and it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, but it's a beautiful nowhere. They have horses, they have lakes, they have bunkhouses. We're toying with the idea of trading upon the Huntsville, Alabama space camp of having a week-long ham camp where kids can kind of go off to camp. They get exposed to electronics, some robotics, but amateur radio is the underlying theme. And if they aren't licensed at the end of the week, they can come home with a technician license and a fairly inexpensive dual band HT. If they have the technician license, they can bump up to general or extra. But they're immersed, and we get either through Skype or in person, you know, some of the real movers and shakers in amateur radio. The American Radio Relay League Foundation is interested in receiving a proposal to help with startup. Do you think that would appeal to some of your students? I mean, if something like that were in existence?
Well, I think absolutely is the short answer. Add a little bit more meat to the substance. I really find the kids get a lot out of space. I mean, you put up a satellite program showing where the polar satellites are at the time and when the passovers are expected. You know, one of the big projects we have planned for later this year is a satellite antenna tracking array, which we thought would be kind of fun. So I think that 21st century stuff, it's intriguing to them, especially when we start talking about the various modes. And if you really want to have in-depth conversations, it's hard to do that in an hour-long meeting. I think a week-long camp would be ideal. Really would be.
Well, this particular place has a regionally recognized observatory, that is, optical telescopes. We would sort of like to experiment with using some of the inexpensive USB dongles for radio telescopes to kind of blend those two together. You can see Venus, you can see Mars through the telescope, but when you see it by radio signal, you know, it adds something to that. So it's just an idea we're tinkering with as we develop it. And the local club members at French Camp would then become the camp counselors for that particular program. I don't know, it you know, it's kind of pie in the sky right now, but I wanted to bounce it off of you to see what you thought.
Well, it's kind of like when Anna went down to Costa Rica. You know, she was there for a week-long deal, and they all kind of started out at various levels. But by the end of the camp, you know, just by hanging around each other, they were all pretty proficient at DXing by the time they had a chance to spend with the Elmers and get that real-life experience of running pileups and all those types of things. So, yeah, I think it's one of those situations where you bring in a lot of kids, different levels of understanding, you know, different abilities based upon their cognitive thinking, all those things, you know, Frank, that go into that stuff. And by the time everybody leaves, they've all learned so much from one another, you can't tell who's who based upon what they know at the end of the week. So I think it's an awesome idea.
I'm finding that a lot of the kids are really enjoying doing a lot of the balloon launches, anything that has to do with space. You know, the radio telescopes are really fun. Anything that that has to do with all of that, and even with the balloon launches, you know, tracking it down with the ham radios and whatnot, and that's how you're using it to track it and see where it's going and whatnot, and then all of the communication that goes back and forth as far as following it. But we need to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
This radio justice is you have to hold one in your hand. For those of you that would like a shortwave radio that's bigger than maybe what you could hold in the palm of your hand, but yet is sensitive and selective, let me talk to you about the CC Radio Shortwave. The purpose of the CC Radio Shortwave was born when an engineer's time went into producing some of the best reception and audio that you could find in a portable radio. It's got all the necessary things, the tweakings available for excellent performance under various conditions, and offers the best combination of sensitivity, selectivity, and audio performance of any radio its size. Now, this radio delivers some of the best FM reception, and thanks to the built-in twin-coil ferrite antenna, the AM antenna I'm talking about, it makes the AM on this radio absolutely exceptional. It has continuous coverage of the shortwave bands and excellent reception right off the whip antenna. The 5-inch speaker is accurate, pleasant, and probably produces deeper bass than any portable of the same size. The CC Radio Shortwave is one of the few radios with a mono switch. When activated, the radio filters out the stereo FM multiplex signal, which can add a hissing noise when you're listening to a weak station. Now, let me tell you, this thing has an RF gain control, bandwidth control, fast and slow tuning. It's got bass and treble controls. It's got a lighted LCD display and lighted buttons. Clock radio, snooze alarm. It only weighs 4.2 pounds, even though it's a pretty good size radio. Has a stereo headphone jack, stereo line output, so you can plug it into a recorder of some sort. It's got an IF out for input into a computer, 50 memory presets, a built-in charger with auto shutoff for nickel cadmium batteries. It uses 4D batteries or 4AA batteries, whichever you prefer. And all the programming backup, that is, for, you know, when you put in your memories and whatnot. Now, you can order this radio from the Sea Crane Company. It's real simple to do. All you have to do is call Bob Crane at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW when you order this radio. Now, that, once again, the phone number is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863.
And welcome back. This is WTWW here in Lebanon, Tennessee. Is everybody still here with us?
Yep.
Yes, we are.
So where did we leave off here? We were talking about outer space, doing all the balloon launches, the activities that the young people are really enjoying. At least that's what I'm seeing.
I was just about to buy a radio from C. Crane after that commercial.
Do you have one?
I'm gonna get one.
Okay,
you sold me.
That's that twin coil ferrite antenna that they talk about.
Built a ferrite, Anna, you'll have to appreciate this from an old geezer. One of the most educational things about antenna design and propagation for me was at 13, I built a ferrite core loop with a Faraday shield. And I actually got it to work with very few tools and no Elmering. I learned it from an article in the International Radio Club of America that came to my RFD mailbox, and I thought I was Albert Einstein because it worked.
It's always an accomplishment when you build something and it doesn't blow up when you turn on.
Exactly.
I wonder how many projects, though, are placed in magazines that if you build them, they can't work until you fix them.
Well, I know at the school I attend, I take a AP computer hardware class, and my computer teacher is always going into our towers or our laptops that we're building, messing something up, so we have to fix it before it'll turn on again.
Ah. Wish I'd have thought about that when I was doing that.
Well, how did your ferrite loop with the Faraday shield work? What were you using it for? Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about that?
For basically, and I'm not just playing off the commercial for the sake of commercialism, but Ted, seriously, your narrative there was bringing me back to those days, and it was broadcast band DXing. And I'm of the opinion that you can learn as much about radio propagation from AM broadcast band DXing, particularly for the new person to it. You don't have to have a license or anything, obviously. But I learned so much. You got rid of the noise. You had the directionality. You could tune the end, or you could turn the antenna so that it wasn't pointing at either station you were trying to hear. But as long you learned the principle of, if you minimize the interference, you may not have as good a signal as you did have for what you're trying to hear, but the relative signal meant you could hear it. So those were the kinds of things that I learned at about age 13, and I could not wait to write the author of that little mimeographed article in the IRCA newsletter that, hey, yo, Adrian, I did it. If you remember the Rocky movie.
Well, Anna, let me ask this question. As far as where you are now, obviously you've accomplished a tremendous amount as far as amateur radio is concerned at a very young age. I guess what are the things that you're looking at now that you haven't either had the time to do, which I can understand. You know, someone living your life, there's probably things you'd love to do, but the time just isn't there. Tell us a little bit about that. What are the parts of the hobby you're looking at now and you're saying, boy, you know, one of these days I'm going to do this. When I have the time to do it, this is going to be the first few things I do.
Well, I think I'd get really interested in moon bouncing and obviously a few more payloads on the high-altitude balloon launches. Both of those things take quite a lot of time, and I wish I could do them more often, but being a high school student with two AP classes doesn't offer a whole lot of that time. But I guess if I had the time, I'd like to get into more outer space-related topics as well as doing more of those balloon launches with my school club.
Anna, I have a really personal question to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a happy birthday?
Yeah, it was. This year was probably one of my best birthdays. I obviously got to go to Huntsville the weekend of my birthday. I actually flew to Huntsville on my birthday. So, yeah, it was a pretty great birthday present getting to go to Huntsville and getting the award.
Well, I'm glad it was a great birthday.
Yeah, I'm very thankful for everyone who either offered me the award or helped me get to the place where I am now. And even I'm very thankful for you guys just allowing me to come on the show and talk with you guys tonight. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's our pleasure.
I'd like to ask your mother just a quick question here. Is she still there? That's all right. That's all right. I'll ask you then. I downloaded Snapchat, and you have to forgive me. I've never messed with it before. I know how to do the Twitters. I can do the hashtag and whatnot. I'm watching the ISS. I watch the Mars rover and whatnot as far as the Twitter stuff. Is there groups on Snapchat, or is that just more your local people, or is there like a national thing to Snapchat? Do you know?
It's everyone's on Snapchat that's my age, to be honest. it's just kind of a fun thing. I mean, I think there's even a part of Snapchat that allows you to make it look like rainbows are barfing out of your mouth. It's just a fun app that people all around the country and even the world use just to kind of stay in touch with people, I guess, and have fun. Also, my mom's standing right here if you wanted to ask her a question.
I was trying to figure out if there was groups that you could join. I downloaded it, but you know, of course, I have no idea what to do with the thing. But I didn't know if there was like ham radio groups that I could join in on it, or if there's any of that kind of stuff yet.
Individual type thing.
Okay, I didn't know. I hadn't messed with it yet.
No problem.
David, how does it feel to be over the hill at your age?
Oh, believe me, it's as fast as technology runs. It's very, very, very easy to get snowed under.
You know what I've noticed more than anything, though? He used to get up on the roof and work on antennas, and then when he was finished working on them, he would just jump off the roof. Just jump off, land on his feet, you know. But I've noticed now over the last few years, he doesn't do that as much as he used to. Do you have any idea why that might be?
You think about medical bills. You know, you think, okay, if I break this, how many days am I going to be out of work?
It's just terrible.
If you jump off the roof enough times, you're eventually going to get some form of benefits.
Oh man, he used to do that. I used to think to myself, how does he do this? You know, but it never never fazed him. I mean, he never, you know, just matter of fact, as far as climbing, I'd say, hey, we want to put a dipole up in the tree. We want to go between here and here, and I'd have the slingshot out and all that kind of stuff. Next thing I know, we started calling him Monkey Man because he would just jump up in the tree and he'd just start climbing until he got all the way to the top. And how he got there, I don't know.
Well, you know? The thing is that he put my brother in charge of the slingshot, and my brother just, he cannot aim worth, I don't think he could hit the broadside of a barn. So getting it in between that correct branch, you know, I could always get right to the right branch that I needed to go to, tie it off, and you're done. Don't have to worry about, you know, getting the fishing line stuck in the tree and getting it out and all that stuff. Just go up there and get it done.
There was a story, though, I heard that you had fallen out of a tree one time, scared Matthew pretty bad. I guess it didn't faze you, but it scared him. He fell out of the top of a tree. I don't know.
Well, I was hanging antenna for him once, and he ended up belting 100 watts out of the antenna on me while I was holding on to it. That was always fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And guess what? We'll be right back with our guest, Anna Veal, W0ANT, and our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH, right after this. For those of you that would like a shortwave radio that's bigger than maybe what you could hold in the palm of your hand, but yet is sensitive and selective, let me talk to you about the CC Radio Shortwave. The purpose of the CC Radio Shortwave was born when an engineer's time went into producing some of the best reception and audio that you could find in a portable radio. It's got all the necessary things, the tweakings available for excellent performance under various conditions, and offers the best combination of sensitivity, selectivity, and audio performance of any radio its size. Now, this radio delivers some of the best FM reception, and thanks to the built-in twin-coil ferrite antenna, the AM antenna I'm talking about, it makes the AM on this radio absolutely exceptional. It has continuous coverage of the shortwave bands and excellent reception right off the whip antenna. The 5-inch speaker is accurate, pleasant, and probably produces deeper bass than any portable of the same size. The CC Radio Shortwave is one of the few radios with a mono switch. When activated, the radio filters out the stereo FM multiplex signal, which can add a hissing noise when you're listening to a weak station. Now, let me tell you, this thing has an RF gain control, bandwidth control, fast and slow tuning. It's got bass and treble controls. It's got a lighted LCD display and lighted buttons. Clock radio, snooze alarm. It only weighs 4.2 pounds, even though it's a pretty good size radio. Has a stereo headphone jack, stereo line output, so you can plug it into a recorder of some sort. It's got an IF out for input into a computer, 50 memory presets, a built-in charger with auto shutoff for nickel cadmium batteries. It uses 4D batteries or 4AA batteries, whichever you prefer. And all the programming backup, that is, for, you know, when you put in your memories and whatnot. Now, you can order this radio from the Sea Crane Company. It's real simple to do. All you have to do is call Bob Crane at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW when you order this radio. Now that, once again, the phone number is 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. You're listening to the QSO Radio Show, and it's all about ham radio. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get back to our guest, Anna Veal, W0ANT, the Young Ham of the Year, along with our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH.
My dad was kind of the opposite. I remember the first time I went on the roof, I had like just gotten licensed, so I was probably 8 and a half. And my dad made me wear my bike knee pads and my skateboard helmet, and he wouldn't let me climb the ladder without securing it with zip ties first.
Oh, man.
Anna, let me ask you just a bit. You've told us a little bit about the kinds of things that you are interested in topic-wise and that you plan to go into biomedical engineering. Do you like soldering? Do you like building circuits and things?
Oh, yeah. I remember I haven't been to Dayton in a couple years, but when I did go to Dayton, I'd always visit this guy named Patrick, and he had a soldering booth. And I would sit there with him for hours and make little analog clocks and stuff like that with the soldering irons and whatnot. I've always enjoyed using the soldering iron and building little trinkets like that.
Well, that's something that when you look at schools of engineering, the gender imbalance is that the guys have typically come in with some of those more pedestrian, everyday kinds of skills that young girls, particularly in high schools, you know, they didn't get. And I hope that things like amateur radio clubs and robotics clubs and things like that are sort of turning the tables on that, so that when young women get to an engineering school, whether it's double E, CSE, or biomedical, or what have you, that they begin to have those practical experiences with a soldering iron and test equipment that the guys have sort of gotten, but they didn't. So that's where I was going. That's where I was coming from. Because there's one day we're going to be in the OR, and you've got to have a soldering iron to do what you're going to do in that operation on a person. I see it coming.
I've had a lot of experience with the gender imbalance, especially going to STEM. I'm in a few of my classes, including my engineering class as well as my hardware class, I'm the only girl. I think our school is about 80-20 when it comes to male versus female. I know that personally, I have a lot more male friends than I do female. And that obviously affects the school club as well, because running out of my high school, there's a few more boys than there are girls in our club.
Yeah, this and one thing I've noticed with the school, as they get into the higher grades, that differential just keeps going up and up. I mean, in fifth grade, it seems, I've got a daughter in fifth grade at the school, and in a class of 30, I think there's 12 girls. And as Ann has pointed out, as the kids get older, I'm not sure if they just want to go to more of a traditional school or what the circumstances are. But it still amazes me to see just how lopsided things are between the you know, the boys and the girls in this type of school.
Well, I certainly hope that it's changing to some degree. The maker movement tends to be a somewhat gendered phenomenon. It tends to be more guys. At schools like Georgia Tech in Atlanta, and I worked at the college board, and I visited Georgia Tech quite a bit. You know, it's a magnet, and you have so many women who come into Georgia Tech that have already done surface mounted components and things like that. But that's kind of on the extreme where you're kind of drawing, you know, with a selectivity factor. So your comments about what's going on in your school are very, very informative. And just as long as the doors are open, and part of it, when you think about things like sports, you have some kids, maybe because of economics, maybe because of parental education, maybe because of where they live, they're not in area X because there's Y and Z as opportunities. And so they're drawn to Y and Z. Whereas if you don't have those other opportunities, you got more people in X, you know, whatever that is. So,
you know, the interesting thing, Fred, with Anna's school, it's a charter school. So there's, as much as when I walk into the school, it has this private college prep feel to it, it's public. It's a choice. People can either send their kids there or they can send them to the local high schools in the district. And it just amazes me that why there's a waiting list for the lower grades, as the kids get older, the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, there's not as big of a list. And that's another thing that surprised me. I think parents think, okay, well, now my kid's in 7th or 8th or 9th grade, I'll let them make a choice on where they want to go to school, which I'm not going to say it's a mistake, but sometimes I don't think it's as informed of a decision as it could be with where all these future jobs are going to be.
Well, you know, you think about both you and your wife are in the teaching business and therefore kind of have an insider's view. Think about those parents who are, they do something else and they've got the more pedestrian understanding of schools and those kind of decisions. And so they're a little bit of a loss, or certainly a disadvantage relative to where you and Peggy are with what you just said.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just the parent base is very technically inclined. I think that's what the other thing. I mean, if a parent went to a traditional high school, was on the football team, those types of things that this school may not offer right now, they may want their child to have that life experience. But at the same time, I would say this is maybe an exaggeration, but probably 9 out of 10 students, their parents are in some technical industry, be it IT professionals. You know, we have Martin Marietta, we have Lockheed Martin, we have a lot of big high tech firms that are in our immediate area, and I think that's our pool of parents. But it still doesn't explain why there's less girls than boys in the high school. I'm still puzzled by that.
Very interesting.
I'm just wondering, though, how it is that in the technical realms, and Anna might be one to answer this question, how would you get more young ladies interested in the technical side of things? I guess what I'm saying is... Is it that it has an image of not being girly enough or something like that? I mean, I would think today in the society we live in that, and maybe I'm overshooting here, but I would think that kind of attitude wouldn't prevail maybe like it did once in the past.
Well, you know, I think it's being entirely honest. I think it's mainly a personality thing. When I was growing up, I was a tomboy, really. I didn't have much friends that were girls. I was always hanging out with the boys in the mud or chasing around playing football. I think technology and STEM especially is seen more as a men's thing, where you have to be into messing around and building things to truly enjoy the aspect of STEM and the aspect of amateur radio. So I think it's more the impression of the hobby than anything, as well as personality. I think it's also pretty intimidating for any girl of any age to join a hobby where it's 90% men. I think it's just a lot of different aspects that add up to the fact that it's intimidating for a girl to join this hobby.
Okay, Mr. Sociologist, what's your take on this?
Well, here's my take on that, is that I think she's got a truly outstanding point, and it's based upon her own experience. Because of that, now what does she really like to do? Contesting. And we all know that a female voice is like honey and flies, so to speak. Perhaps not the best metaphor. But a female voice in a pileup is always the one that gets the call. And it's partly because of that imbalance. So that's a small upside, I guess, Anna, for the downside of what you're saying. But I mentioned the opportunities for Y and Z. And Y and Z doesn't have to be subject matter. Y and Z can be other life choices. And at a certain point in time, as you begin to go through this life course, we do certain things at certain age ranges in our lives. There are other things to do. Now, I'm certainly not referring to your parents, but just the hypothetical parents in general. And remember, parents tend to be a generation behind. They have a cultural imprint from a previous generation. That slows down social change, because what would parents of a previous generation say to a tomboy who is in high school, who has a soldering iron on her birthday list, nice Hacko 880D, as opposed to something that, as Ted said, might be a more girly thing? What are those parents going to do in terms of trying to shape her thinking? Probably going to try to get them reoriented into something that's more gendered. Now, I don't know if that's a complete explanation in your school or not, but it's a more general sort of sociological response. But the upside, Anna, is that with a female voice in a contest, you're going to get a lot more people than I'm going to get coming back to you.
And I mean, I've experienced that too. During contests, it's a little easier doing pileups to get through, obviously, like you mentioned. It's one of the reasons I enjoy it so much, I guess. But yeah, I really do think it's also a cultural thing, like you were saying. I kind of like to relate it to music as well. Obviously, my parents' taste in music is a lot different than mine. They're always going to argue that their rock and roll is better than my dubstep music. So I think it's a generation gap, honestly. I think a few more generations into the future, it'll continue to improve as more and more girls and more families get introduced to real detailed technology and learn more about what technology can do. And I think that with the future will come a lot more girls inside of the hobby.
I really hope so. I just think, as Ted said, it's that diversity that enhances the value.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I know that, it always has seemed to me, you know, like, for example, amateur radio always has suffered from, I think, severe imbalances. I mean, you get on the air and try to find somebody, you know, on one of the bands that's, 30 or under, you know. So, and that may be a difficult task, you know, finding women on the air, difficult task. So I don't know. I see imbalances there, and I don't know if that's just, and that's why I said, hey, Mr. Sociologist, is this just a natural occurrence, or is there a way, long term, to kind of help balance it out, or to give it, give it a little bit more equality, I guess.
Well, one way of doing it, Ted, is to call CQ, anyone under age 30, anyone under age 30, calling CQ, anyone under age 30, please come now.
You know, one thing I've also noticed is how many kids we have in our club whose parents are also hams. I think back to Dayton in 2012 when Anna and I went there and we listened to Aaron King, AK4, I think it's Japan Golf, AK4 Japan Golf. And, you know, she was the MIT student who launched her MIT acceptance tube on a Edge of Space balloon launch. And I think it went viral. It was great. But I think I know her dad was a ham. And I'm trying to think of how many kids we have in a club right now whose parents aren't necessarily hams. And I think I might be able to think of a couple. So it kind of gets to, you know, what these kids grow up with. And the kids who grew up with computers are obviously going to be in Anna's hardware class that she's taking. And trying to figure out a way to bridge over from families with technology backgrounds into amateur radio. I think personally the 21st century, anything dealing with space, the kids just seem to dive into it. Not that HF is boring, but VHF, UHF, experimentation with all their experiments they can do, like TSA, the Students Technology Association, where they have competitions. They can enhance their experiments with the RF privileges that they have on things that other kids won't necessarily be able to do. We try to open their eyes like that, but
I think that's a good way to point it as, or put it as a, we need to show kids the enhancement that the hobby can bring. Obviously, like a lot of you had stated earlier, amateur radio shouldn't be seen as a job. And I know for me, amateur radio has enhanced a lot of other hobbies that I have. Amateur radio has obviously helped me in my technology aspects, as well as my public speaking aspects, all the way to my study habits. Obviously, studying for my technician and general license showed me some good study habits that helped me in high school now. So I think just showing girls and young people the benefits that come along with the hobby, not just the hobby itself, is also important.
Well said. Well said.
Well, you know what? As they used to say in radio, the old clock on the wall says, as if it would speak, we're out of time. And I've really enjoyed this. Anna, you've been fantastic. We've really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Anna, you have taught your parents well.
Is there anything you'd like to say, parting comments here, just before we go off the air? I want to make sure to give you the opportunity and the floor to make closing remarks, I guess.
Well, obviously, just I'd like to say a great big thank you to the people I mentioned earlier, like Don, Will Banks, Brian, N5ZGT, Dwayne, and also Scott Burkhart, Whiskey Zero Kilo Uniform. Just all of these people, I'm sure I'm forgetting many. And especially to you guys for just allowing me to be on the show. All the people that I've met throughout the hobby have given me different aspects and different looks into this hobby, and I'm sure that the hobby will continue to give back to me as I will continue to give back to it. So just thank you all for having me on the show.
You're quite welcome. Frank, any closing remarks here?
Well, I'll finish as I began. This is truly someone deserving of the Young Ham of the Year award. She has accomplished so much. And after, you know, an hour or so talking with her and us kind of asking her different questions, her parents being in the mix, you get a sense of the context of where Anna is coming from. And layering on what her ambitions are, I say this from having dealt with young people a lot, and you know, back to the times of the Greeks, you know, it was the world is over as we know it. The youth of today are just, you know, just running wild and rampant. I am 180 degrees. When I meet people like Anna, it gives me hope and faith for tomorrow. And I say that from the bottom of my heart, that I've enjoyed it, and I feel like we've got people like this coming into our hobby, and it will be in good hands.
David, anything you'd like to add to this?
I hope to hear hear you on one of the next contests. I like listening to the contests. I don't really participate in them, but I love listening to them. I like listening to all of the Lighthouse stuff, a lot of the 4th of July stuff. I'll listen for you on the air there. Again, thank you very much for coming on with us.
And I want to say once again, thanks for everyone that participated tonight.
Well, that's about all the time we've got this week for QSO. We invite you to join us again next week, same time, same station, same frequency, same place, wherever you may be listening. I want to say thanks to our guest, the Young Ham of the Year, Anna Veal, W0ANT, along with our co-host, Frank Howell, K4FMH. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. And 73s. Thank you.